Welcome to the Content and Media Matters podcast, a series of interviews with key leaders throughout the industry, all brought to you by the Content and Media team at Newco, a specialist global recruitment and executive search firm.
Welcome to the Content and Media Matters podcast. Your hosts today are me, Henry Johnson, consultant, and Tegan Villani, managing consultant. And we're delighted today to be joined by Elena Hall, the Vice President of Global Account Management at JW Player. Having begun her career working for Z-Media as a marketing and advertising intern, Elena then began her sales career working as an account executive, then progressing onto Media Radar as a renewals manager, and now with JW Player, where Elena has spent the past 5 years working her way up from a senior account manager up to the Vice President of Global Account Management. Welcome to the show, Elena.
Thank you so much. I'm really excited about this.
So to get us started, we always like to ask people the same question. How and why did you first get into the content and media industry?
My background is a little different. I have a degree in fashion merchandising, which is like business of fashion. I thought I wanted to go work for a big brand in corporate. And then my internship, as you mentioned, was for a third party agency that worked for Condé Nast, which was glamorous, of all these magazines you're, you know, representing and getting to know, going to parties, et cetera. But that's really where I entered the content industry. So through that, I was doing some marketing assistant work and then eventually worked my way up to becoming one of the youngest sales reps on the team. And we were selling, print, let's be clear, which is, I'm dating myself, I guess, but we were selling print ads mostly. And then that's when digital and video spots first became a thing for advertisers. So yeah, that's how I got into it.
Oh, I always love asking that question. It's never the same answer for, I think, anyone in the industry. And you can't write it. And now handing over to Tegan to dig a little bit further into the past.
Oh, thanks, Henry. It's amazing, isn't it? I would say I speak to more people than not who did a kind of sideways or a segue step into this industry. It's very, very interesting. Over the course of your career, Elena, and this could come from any part of your career, who has been the biggest influence on your career, or indeed what has been the biggest influence on your career?
Yeah, I think a few people. One of my uncles was a VP of sales. So when I got into college and throughout my internships, he was always egging me on to learn sales, learn how to negotiate, kind of take some steps in his direction. But that was really helpful and gave me, I think, some, you know, skills that got me to where I am. On top of that, there's been a bunch of female leaders that were in either like a head of revenue or chief revenue position at different companies I've been at, which I always looked up to and wanted to be them, you know, when I got there. And I learned a lot of leadership skills from those people too. So yeah, there's a few.
I totally understand what you're saying as well. There's nothing like having that kind of older role model to take bits, learn from them and aspire to be. What, talking of role models, what are some of the lessons that you've learned in your commercial roles across your career that you now pass on to the teams that you lead?
That's a good question. I always learned to lead by example. I think that's what was mirrored for me in some of those role models that I just mentioned. So if I'm asking the team to do something, you better believe I've either done it or I'm willing to do it myself. Another, you know, key thing I think is just to continue being curious or ambitious, even if something is new or hard or different from what you're doing in the past. Just if you can continue to ask questions, ask why, and get to a final result, that will always help you in a sales career, especially in a discovery if you're talking to a certain client or prospect. But also ask your product team, like, why are we not doing this feature, or why this, why that, has always been really helpful for me. And the last one I'll say is my old CRO at Media Radar used to say, control what you can control. which is a life lesson for us all. But, you know, if you're sitting there thinking like, oh, this person's not getting back to me, like whatever, for deadlines, or you need to get that deal signed, if you just kind of like remind yourself, control what you can control, it's like, okay, what can I do to progress this forward? What steps can I take, or, you know, what kind of visibility or help can I ask for from the other managers or leaders on the team? And yeah, that one's always helped me, especially in my management role today.
Yeah, control the controllables. It always astounds me as well how people ask for help. We're an industry of people that love to help each other. So yeah, you'll always find individuals, be it in your company or the business you work for or your network or outside, ask for help. And yeah, learn from each other. I say that to my teams all the time. No such thing as a silly question.
That's nice.
Yeah. And have you got anything in your career that, you know, or an achievement that you're most proud of to date?
I was thinking about this. I wouldn't say there's one in particular moment or specific achievement. I mean, you could say winning President's Club for the first time as an individual contributor is definitely a great achievement to do. But I would say for me, I loved becoming a mentor for other women in the industry, or just in general, people at the JW Player team, now that I've become a leader, and learning how to do that properly from other mentors that I've had in the past. It's really, I think, a personal big achievement for me, and I want to continue doing that.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And we need that. We absolutely need that within the industry, which we will come on to a little bit later. But Henry, I'm going to pass on to you for our next section.
Oh, thank you, Tegan. Really insightful to get some snippets from you there, Elena. And we don't like to predict the future, but we do like to ask questions about the present and tiptoe in. So I'd be keen to understand, what is your take on the current state of the content and media industry at the moment?
Yeah, in general, it's made a lot of progress, right? Especially I mentioned earlier from where we were only able to sell like 30 second ad spots for a video back, you know, 10, 12 years ago, to, you know, being able to spin up a live stream in a few seconds and getting content out to anywhere, really. So I would say that we've come a long way. There's still a lot of infrastructure that needs to get into the cloud. There's still, I think it's like millions of people who don't have stable internet in different countries, right, that are not able to access content just as you and I are here in the UK. But I would say specific to like video and delivery, just getting a little bit more streamlined on the quickness and readiness that allows to get content quicker to your audience, as well as, you know, a lot of things that we work with our publishers or customers on here at JW is there's already a lot of content, right? You have Instagram and TikTok and news websites that you read and podcasts that you listen to. But users are kind of like overwhelmed. And I think the job of publishers these days, or anyone who is putting content out into the world, is making sure that it's either easy for their users to find the content that they want to consume, or getting the right content to the users that the brand wants them to consume, right? So you think about, I'm bringing TikTok up again, but yeah, think about the algorithm they have with the For You page, right? Like, I don't know if you've ever spent time on it, but you're sucked in for hours consuming because it has learned what you would value. And I think if we can do that for a lot of other mediums and a lot of other platforms, it would just be so much more beneficial for the overall user base.
It is fascinating on TikTok as well, how it's so tailored specifically to you. And I think if that can transition over into the industry, that would be excellent. And you touched on a bit there about cloud infrastructures. And I'd be keen to understand your take on how cloud-based video streaming infrastructures can really help improve viewer experience for the end users.
Yeah, I mean, without like getting into too many specifics, you know, we have been in the video streaming business for a while, and we've worked with a bunch of different partners back on the CDN side, et cetera, and have overall been pretty successful in saying that we like to make sure that we can help get video quickly to someone's audience and that there are no issues with caching or, you know, things like that. But I mean, I'm not sure. I think it's really going to take like a whole industry-wide like evaluation in order to sit down and understand like what is the way of the future in different markets I meant or different parts of the world, and just continuing to kind of like evolve on it. I wouldn't say it's one specific thing, but like continuing to evolve on the infrastructure as a whole. And it's not just like JW Player or like different other CDN companies like we work for or work with, but it's really like the industry moving forward together so that like any user or any company that does need to produce and stream out video, it's not like too complicated for them to do that.
Completely. And I think everyone as well was working for this end user. It's all the same goal, just at different organizations. And I think collaboratively coming together for that is no bad thing. And I mean, either in your personal life or professional life, what are you most excited about in the future?
I think what I touched on earlier about being excited on how we can adapt ways of delivering content out that's more specific to users, it's going to be really interesting how AI plays into that in the future. And yeah, just, you know, overall what the world could look like when there are more users in general, like I mentioned with the internet being available or not readily available in certain markets. There's millions of people that could just increase the overall market share like significantly. But that's in general. Yeah. I mean, personally, I'm excited to kind of see where 2023 goes. We've just been talking about NAB and IBC. I wasn't able to attend CES this year, but I heard there were some good ideas coming out of that. And, you know, there's a lot of talk about this year being a little bit of a bummer with the economic downturn, et cetera. But I think good things could actually come out of this, right? We got to go down to come back up. And that's what I'm excited to see.
Definitely. And I think as well, some people say that we are in the midst of it now. Some say the recession is to come, but I think that the best will be coming for sure. Tegan, handing over to you for our topic that matters.
Oh, well, diversity, equity and inclusion is a hugely important role, definitely for me in my job and I think for yourself, Elena. Mm-hmm. It's something that our industry still really, really needs, not just to be talked about, but also actioned. And we'll definitely unpack that a little bit further. I'd love to hear, how have your experiences been over your career being a woman in technology? I'd just love to ask that question to begin with.
Yeah, I think that over the years, it's definitely gotten better. I was the first woman in our UK office. 4 years.
I know the feeling.
And that's not to say that, like, you know, it just was the time and the place, and we were very small presence here. So when I came over and I became a leader, and one of my main priorities was hiring other women to join my team, at least, or helping the other sales leaders find the right talent that are also different, right? So I would say that was definitely something I had to kind of navigate through, as well as just in general, I would say that there are like less women in leadership nowadays and in tech. And then it's just, you know, it's been like an underlying thing throughout my career, but I've tried not to let it, you know, take over or prevent me from moving forward or wanting to do more or take on more or join new projects, et cetera. But yeah, it's definitely underlying.
Yeah, it's, I know exactly how you feel. I was also the first woman in our office here for, I think it was two and a half years partly because COVID happened, but it was a long time. And I remember when we then hired some women, it was incredible. But you realize how actually there's part of you that you hold back, there's part of you that you sort of strip away when you're just surrounded by your male counterparts. I mean, don't get me wrong, they talk about their hair and their shoes a lot, but you need that balance.
Yeah, and of course.
I guess, you know, you've touched there on being a woman in leadership. Why are there so few women in C-level positions? And conversely, why is it so important to address that and for organizations to have women in leadership?
Yeah. So I have a few theories, but, you know, it's a chain of events which starts with, if you have less women in individual contributor positions, it's less, you know, your funnel gets smaller as people move up in their careers to become leaders, right?
Yeah.
It's like a natural answer. I also do think there is sometimes a, you know, gap in women continuing on that leadership track when they do go down a path of having children and taking mat leave. You know, I won't say setback because I don't like to view it as that, but it does, like I say, it's a gap. Like, you have to then, you know, come back into it. And especially here in the UK, which is different from the US, a lot of people take more time. So for maternity or paternity leaves, so that can also be a factor in helping that person progress over time into a leadership position. There's like a few of my theories. I think it's also just, you know, you had mentioned earlier, maybe about buzzword with imposter syndrome, or people or women thinking that maybe they can't get to that level in their career. So they're okay with being maybe middle management or an ISP. And it's really our job to help encourage people who want to go down that path, right? Not everyone does, and that's totally fair, but who want to go down that path that they can do it. And there's a ton of people to support them in that. To answer your second question, why is it important? Because if you do have more women or just different types of leaders, right? Like, let's zoom out of just the women category or the gender. It shows people from different backgrounds or, you know, whatever, that they have someone to look up to, or they can see like, okay, this company does support different types of leadership in, you know, wherever they are, and they will aspire to be that and know that it is a possibility at that company. And I think also, you know, a lot of times when people are interviewing, they look to see that. What kind of different people do you have in leadership that are not just, you know, standard male? And that encourages them also to join a company potentially.
Yeah, I completely agree. It's difficult, isn't it? What would you see the challenges are, or that the industry have to overcome in addressing the balance? I know we've touched on some of it there, mat leave, imposter syndrome, creating the opportunities for women, but anything else?
I think in relation to just diversity and equity, inclusion in general, it's all about creating space or a safe space for these types of conversations. So if companies promote that or allow it, meaning they create that space to have difficult or tough conversations about why they don't potentially have women in leadership or whatever the case may be, that at least shows a little bit of vulnerability into that they're open to and open to learning, because no one is like knows the perfect answer. Everyone's learning each day, trying to figure it out. We're all just trying to do our best. But I think it's really important for companies to at least show that they are willing to have those conversations and lean into it. And that will also trickle down into other people, other companies and their community, and just allow it to kind of come to the forefront so that we're all leaning on each other to understand how we can do better.
It's funny, isn't it? It's as you're saying that, I was thinking, wow, there's the sense of a leaning into the discomfort, yeah. But there's also a real sense of this isn't one person's fight has negative connotations as the word, but it isn't one person's responsibility. Yeah, that exactly. The only way we're going to improve this is corporately, yeah. And as an industry and as a group of people, mm-hmm. And that will impact and improve everyone's lives within the industry, but there has to be a togetherness.
Yeah, exactly. And holding each other accountable.
Yeah.
Our leadership teams accountable and each other. And I think a really good thing that we've done is incorporate like our DEI principles into a lot of things.
Yeah.
Even trickling down to like review cycles, right? Like, are you as an individual portraying or showing these values or, you know, these principles in your day-to-day work and how you work with others? I think that's important.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a fantastic practical thing people can do, right? Because we talk about it now. Hallelujah. We talk about it. Yeah. We've moved forwards.
Right.
But actually, we need to move from just talking about this problem into creating that talk into action.
Yeah.
So in terms of addressing the diversity, inclusion, and imbalance, what would you say a company should do or a leadership team should do if they wanted to create a D&I initiative in their organization? You've already started touching on it, but I'd love to draw that out a little more.
It is, if some company hasn't began or is on the tip of beginning, it is like a large program that will take years, right? And because it all comes down to changing the culture of a company. If you were not talking about DEI initiatives before and now all of a sudden you are, people will be like, what's going on? So you have to go through a process of educating first. Why is this important? Why are we talking about it now? You know, how is it going to affect our company's goals, bottom line, right? Like bringing it back to the impact of the business, and how is it going to, you know, help us retain employees, attract new employees, all those things. I think education first is like the first step. And, you know, back to your point about what's the action you take. I think it's just small movements, small programs, things that you can do. You know, I mentioned like what we've tried in the past is about like bringing those values into like a review cycle. So it's not just on stats of like how you're doing against your targets and your numbers and the KPIs within your job, but are you also following company values and principles that are inclusive, et cetera. Having more open conversations, you know, also like learning labs for people to understand like different aspects of it. Like, what does it mean to be inclusive? And, you know, what does microaggressions look like in the workplace? Like things like that, and more frequently. But yeah, I would just say it's really about a lot of small things that are going to add up over time to help minorly change the way that a company culture evolves. It's not going to happen overnight. And also it would be shocking if it did, because everyone is already used to a certain way of doing things, right? In order to have change be effective, you have to have like small little movements over time to do that.
I guess the obvious analogy is weight loss or trying to put on muscle in the gym, right? You can go and do one workout and feel amazing, but that's actually not going to make a difference. And it's even not going to make a difference if you eat healthily for just one day a week. Yeah. It's doing it consistently, tiny little changes over a long period of time. Yeah. And then suddenly we'll look back and go, whoa, look where we've come from.
Exactly. Yeah. And then, you know, I mentioned before, but tying it back to the business is really helpful, because I do think programs like DEI sometimes get scrutiny on budgeting and time and focus, which everyone knows it's the right thing to do, but how much do we spend or resources on it? And if the company and, you know, bless the HR department for taking that on. But if they can really tie it back to like how this is really going to make it a better, more profitable, more plentiful, bountiful company, then it'll really go a long way.
Yeah. Yeah, indeed. And do you have any advice that you would give to somebody who was in a minority in the workplace? And I don't know, maybe was finding that difficult or not finding that difficult. What would your advice be?
That's a good one. I would say, this sounds generic, but like, don't give up on it, right? Like there's always going to be, you know, setbacks or people who discourage you or, you know, rules or ways of doing business that might seem discouraging for someone in a minority. You might really like the product or the company that you're working with, but there's some other stuff that is prohibiting you in your mind from progressing. So I would just say like, don't give up on it. Like keep trying, keep like pivoting and figuring out ways around it. And, you know, key thing we touched on earlier, but ask for help. There's probably someone at the company who's been through something similar or someone who's a friend of a friend or in the industry, that would be open to sharing a situation similar to what they went through, offering up their advice or how they, you know, tackled that problem. And that might encourage that person to continue going and pursuing whatever next step or ambition that they have.
I always think as well, when I come across this, I always want to say to people, it's okay to be you.
Yeah.
Like don't think you've got to be like them or, yeah, or I don't know, just be you. You've yeah. been hired because of who you are. Please be yourself. And if people can relax into that and accept themselves and know that they're bringing something good to an organization, let alone the world, then that will really help the imposter syndrome. And then people will ask questions. And I hope that would, I don't know, help.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I definitely agree with that. We're all different and that is for a reason, right? So if someone doesn't think that that being them is a good fit for the company they're in or the work that they're doing, then also maybe it's time to change, because there will be some place else that they do fit in and that does, you know, give them the tools to be successful or give them the space to have difficult conversations and et cetera.
Absolutely. Well, thank you very much for all of your insights on that, Elena. And Henry, I'm going to pass the microphone back to yourself.
Thank you so much, Elena. That is a topic that I know is so important to discuss, and we could have kept on going as well, but we've only got you for the hour. So more on the personal side of things. So we've learned a bit about you already, but we're definitely a curious bunch. What would you say would be your perfect weekend?
In London or anywhere?
Anywhere.
Okay. Well, being from Florida, the Sunshine State, I would love to be somewhere warm and in the sun. Again, probably a lot of people would. But I like being outside. I'd probably love to like wake up early, have a nice cup of coffee on the beach, take a nice long walk or hike or something, or bike ride. Yeah, I would say like that would be something I would love to do. I also, you know, again, being from Florida, like being on the boat or going swimming in the ocean. So I'd probably incorporate that as well, followed by just a really nice dinner party with a bunch of friends, good bottle of wine, and I love sunsets.
Oh yeah. So
anywhere to possibly see a really killer sunset would be my ideal, you know, weekend evening activity.
Sounds incredible. Get us there, Elena, for sure.
Then we all win $1 million at the end of it. No,
yeah, that would be the cherry on top of it all. Handing over to you for our quick fire round.
Oh, thanks. I'm still envisaging the sunset and what I'm just sorry it's so cold here. I'm sorry, on behalf of British people, I apologize. It will get warmer, it will. Okay, so I'm going to dive straight into this.
Okay, ready.
What's your favorite game or sport to watch and play?
To watch basketball, so like NBA. To play, I like to play tennis.
Oh, who's your team? Who do you follow in the NBA?
The Miami Heat.
Miami Heat. You heard it here first. Amazing. Yeah. Would you rather ride a bike, ride a horse, or drive a car?
I would say it depends on the circumstance, but I'm going to say drive a car.
Cool. Window or aisle seat?
Oh, window all the time.
So you can see the sunset?
No, I should... You know, you get to lean up against the window, you get to open it and see what time of day it is, you get to see, you know, it's just like a little bit more control than being in the middle seat or the aisle seat.
I'm with you. Cardio or weights?
Cardio.
And what's your favorite vacation or vacation location?
Vacation spot or what?
Yeah.
So far, well, I recently went to Cape Town in South Africa. I don't know if you guys have ever been, but it was 10 out of 10, amazing place. I'd love to go back. So I would say to date, that's my favorite vacation.
I'll add it to the list.
Yeah.
And if you could live anywhere, where would it be?
Well, right now it's London, but I'd probably move back to Miami and live in Miami. It's a wonderful place.
Cinema or theater?
Theater.
Espresso or latte?
Latte.
Latte. And if you could eat one meal for the rest of your life, what would it be?
This sounds like a child's meal, but I would say like pasta, like spaghetti and meatballs, like something like very standard, but it's a staple. You know, it's always going to be good.
Yeah, my husband makes the best meatballs and it just, you can't go wrong.
Okay, yeah, now I'm hungry.
come round, I'll get him to make them. Well, our final question to all of our guests is always the same. And it would be, what one piece of advice would you give to somebody who was entering the industry?
Again, just I think curiosity is always my main piece of advice, because as you enter an industry like this, there's so many different avenues. It gets very technical, right? And you could either come from a background of engineering and understand that, or come from a publishing, you know, advertising background like myself. I would just say the only way you're going to succeed and learn and continue to be a top performer in, you know, that particular product or that industry is to know it. So if you're curious and asking questions, meeting with like a solutions engineer on the team just to like pick their brain on how something works, and you know, you don't know, or you want to know more, I think that is a really good way to be successful.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Henry. I'll pass back to you to close the show today.
Oh, well, thank you so much, Elena. It was a pleasure to have you on as a guest, and we're looking forward to catching up soon.
All right. Thank you so much. This is lovely.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you enjoyed it, please do subscribe and give us a rating. It really helps these stories to be found and enjoyed by more people. For more information about NewCo, we can be found at www.newco-group.com. That's NEUCO-group.com.